Hello, thank you for having me. I'm going to try and breeze through this. I always say that. It doesn't usually work out, but I'm going to try so that we have time for questions and discussion. So again, I'm a policy associate within the Division of Health Policy at the New York Academy of Medicine, where we do policy research and advocacy to advance the health of urban populations. And I'm going to talk about the work that we've been doing in the field of drug policies, particularly the development of what we're calling the Blueprint for a Public Health and Safety Approach to Drug Policy. We did this in collaboration with the Drug Policy Alliance and also with partial support from the Drug Policy Alliance. So we know, as we've heard already, that there are a host of negative health outcomes as well as social and economic outcomes related to drug use, but also related to how our society responds to drug use. There are also stark disparities seen by race and by income, particularly in the criminal justice system, where people of color are disproportionately burdened by arrest and criminal justice involvement, even though we see use is comparable across race. And so what we see, or what we've been discussing at NIAM and also with our public health allies, as well as our criminal justice and drug policy allies, is that the current approach has been inadequate. It is one that's been rooted in a criminalization-based approach, largely focused on use and not as much on health outcomes, and a policy approach that's been focused on largely on punishment rather than support, with other silos kind of operating disconnected or uncoordinated from each other and largely in individual silos. And so what we thought, particularly with the reform of the Rockefeller drug laws, one of the most harshest mandatory minimum sentencing laws in the U.S. and New York, when the reform of those laws came in 2009, New York Academy of Medicine, along with Drug Policy Alliance and other advocates, had discussions of what a new public health approach would look like, since this reform is signaling kind of a paradigm shift, where policy leaders are even saying that no longer should we be approaching drug use from a criminal perspective, but more from a health perspective. And so with these discussions, we decided to paint that picture more clearly of what do we mean when we say a public health approach to drug policy. And so that's when we started the development of the blueprint for a public health approach to drug policy. And we wanted to develop a blueprint that spoke to all four pillars and not just one silo. And the four pillars model is kind of this organizational model that we've seen has success and has been implemented and used in other countries. And so we decided with the development of the report, we're going to look to the four pillars model, as well as have an overarching goal to describe what the key problems and policy barriers are facing communities who are most affected. And we also wanted to develop a blueprint that not only described the problem, described the strategy, but also provide recommendations of how we can move forward. And one of the overarching guiding principles in the development of this blueprint was for it to be informed directly by communities and people who are most affected, as well as speak across sectors and integrate the different silos. Excuse me. So with that, we also wanted to use the best available evidence. So in our methodology, we reviewed the literature as well as existing policy documents and analysis that's already been done in this area. We also consulted with different experts across the fields. And then, as I said before, people directly impacted. And we did this through community consultations that we did across New York City and New York State. We talked to over 500 participants. Including service providers, people who actively use drugs, people who are in recovery, people with HIV/AIDS, and the different service providers that worked with those individuals, as well as residents and tenants councils and tenants associations. So just community members who happen to live in those communities. And we also had one consultation with young adults as well. And this is kind of a map to show of the different areas that we went to, as well as the community-based organizations that helped us in our recruitment and organization of those consultations. And so we asked the question, very open in our protocol, of what community members and what those individuals felt were the ways that drug use and our responses to drug use were problematic. And we really let them drive the discussion without imposing any of our views in a discussion. And broadly, much of the community input was aligned with a lot of the public health principles and concepts that we already know and have discussed even just now on this panel. So I don't think there is anything particularly new or surprising in this information here, but really what this was an attempt to kind of bring it all together in a narrative, a holistic narrative about a comprehensive drug policy strategy that's community-informed, and in this instance, really oriented towards the community, so oriented towards the communities of New York specifically. So I'm going to talk about the cross-cutting issues and then go into the pillars really quickly. Across all of the discussions, cross-cutting across all the issues was the belief that health outcomes, so not only drug dependency, but health outcomes broadly, and the responses and the investments that we make in communities, of which drug policy is just one type, was closely linked to race and place. And a lot of participants echoed this. And also that there were broader structural issues that contributed to these disparities by race and these disparities by place that was critical, and that our current drug policies and drug interventions weren't really addressing, or in fact how some of our drug policies were actually contributing to some of these structural factors like poverty and unemployment. And so this is also aligned with what we see in some of our data and some of the data that we just spoke about, and what we've seen in also neighborhood level studies in the public health literature that looked at neighborhood level factors and the relationship with those factors and community health outcomes. So what the data has shown is that communities most impacted by the collateral consequences of our drug policies and problematic drug use are the same communities burdened by poverty, which in New York City is just one example, but I think you probably see those bright red spots in other cities, so it's not unique to New York City. So look at the bright orange, South Bronx, East Harlem, Central Brooklyn are the general areas that you see come up very brightly on these maps a lot. They're the same communities who happen to be the communities of color. They're the same communities who are also impacted by incarceration, higher rates of police, higher rates of surveillance, higher rates of arrests, and same communities that also have poorer outcomes generally, as well as poor health outcomes not necessarily directly related to drug use, as well as those that do have a relationship with the sequelae of drug use. And so, moving on to the other cross-cutting theme, part of the reason for these poor outcomes and these disparities that participants spoke about and really underlined is the poor access to appropriate and timely services that particularly that people of no income or low income who chronically use drugs faced. However, among the population that uses the highest amount, or I should say the most costliest care, a large proportion have a substance use disorder or even a substance use disorder and a mental illness. So in this graph, based on a research study that was done in New York City that looked at Medicaid spending, excluding long-term care recipients, it found that the top 10% highest Medicaid beneficiaries accounted for 57% of the total Medicaid costs, and two-thirds of those high-cost utilizers had a substance use condition and half had a mental health condition as well as a substance use disorder. So, and then our fourth theme relating to services across sectors was how punitive our drug policies are, which has also resulted in very punitive and exclusionary policies in the different sectors. Policies that prevent people from accessing resources, policies that directly affect the social determinants of health, and that marginalize people from services. So, for example, in housing, how people are excluded from access to public housing due to their due to arrests or convictions related to drug use, the same is seen in education, financial aid, across the board. And then finally, for the cross-cutting themes, was how more emphasis on evidence was needed, and also an emphasis on cross-sector collaboration. So not only collaboration across the different silos, but also collaboration that meaningfully involved communities, and that was really emphasized throughout about how communities felt separated from the process. And so again, these are the themes that kind of came out and were echoed in all the pillars. Target neighborhoods and disparities, address structural factors, increase accessibility to services, which would also help in reducing costs down the line, as well as avoid and work against stigma and exclusionary policies, and finally evidence and collaboration. So I'm gonna try and go through this real quick so that we could get to some questions. So prevention, again, the idea of addressing structural factors came up, and although participants did talk about drug education and prevention programs, they also talked about how we should think about prevention from a community and economic development lens. So when communities and and states are talking about economic development programs and economic development initiatives, public health officials and communities should be in those discussions as it has a health impact, and an impact on community outcomes like resiliency, social connections and cohesion, and these discussions should also incorporate other organizations in the community, like faith-based organizations, et cetera, and that we should also, in these discussions, keep in mind the special populations that are especially impacted. And then when we talked about youth development, in addition to, again, education and skills building and different initiatives along those lines, participants were also concerned about how schools were contributing or had incorporated exclusionary policies in their practices, particularly in their disciplinary practices, and the racial disparities that kind of came out of that, as we see in suspensions and expulsions. And so, from a youth development lens, a lot of participants call for more supportive interventions to be used for young people, and especially because a lot of behavioral outcomes may be attributed to issues like trauma, which was another underlying theme that came out a lot in these discussions, and the need for more support and more interventions around addressing trauma and how it wasn't being sufficiently addressed in communities most affected. And when individuals talked about trauma, the participants talked about trauma very broadly. And they also noted that there are a lot of other services in addition to schools that touch populations that are predominantly affected by trauma, including child services, but also services like housing and shelters, and the need for them to have to incorporate a more trauma-informed approach in all their work, as well as the need for them to be more inclusive rather than punitive and restrictive towards people who use drugs, people who are actively using drugs, or people who are in recovery, or people who relapse from drugs. In treatment, the issue of stigma, again, particularly came up, and how treatment services were especially stigmatized, but also how treatment services themselves treated people who used drugs in a punitive fashion. And so, again, being influenced by this punitive framework that we have, and a lot of people felt that even though beds or services may have been available in the community, they weren't accessible in that people didn't want to go there because they didn't want to be treated poorly. They felt that they had nowhere to go even though there were services there. They weren't accessible in other ways. And then when people talk about the quality of treatment, the opinions varied, but the overarching thread is really that different modalities work for different people. And so there was really a lot of discussion around developing a treatment system or treatment programs that had an eclectic set of treatment elements that can be flexible to the patient's needs. A lot of people didn't feel empowered or didn't feel like they had control over their treatment plans. And also, again, going from a punitive approach and stigmatizing approach to more compassionate and holistic approach that looked beyond short-term abstinent metrics that we commonly see to metrics of overall health, well-being, and even productivity. However, the continued over-involvement in the criminal justice system and the influence of the criminal justice system, particularly on treatment determination and treatment sanctions, is still perceived to be problematic and a barrier to us actually achieving this ideal, comprehensive, patient-centered model and continues to be an issue. So harm reduction was an area that wasn't as well understood as the other areas, and also an area that wasn't as widely accepted, partly due to a lack of information about what harm reduction was. But regardless of the misgivings, many supported the general idea and concept of preventing death, of services to prevent death and services to prevent harm to people. So there was a general consensus around that, even though there were still misgivings around the term of harm reduction. And so I think the overarching question with harm reduction really is how can we build out the services that we have to better help people who use drugs, especially people who use drugs who have high needs, not only reducing injuries related to drug use, but how can we holistically support people who use drugs in other ways with other ancillary supportive services. Some of the literature and some of the programs are, there are other models seen in other countries, but aren't particularly but face serious political and policy barriers here, largely due to the current criminal justice framework that we have. I'm sorry, I'm trying to go really fast here. So in terms of public safety, when we spoke about police, this is an area where people had the most passionate discussions, especially in New York City, which you may not be surprised of due to what you've seen in the media. And this is an area where people, there are a lot of discussions around the antagonism and hostility between between community members and police. However, people were still very concerned about the violence in their communities, drug-related or otherwise, and echoed the theme of, again, looking at structural factors that contributed to safety and not just arrests and incarceration. And so many discussed the need for a new approach to public safety, including the ways that we measure policing and the incentives that we use around policing, and how we reward policing strategies. In these discussions of public safety, drug courts and the implementation of Rockefeller drug laws also came up and were seen as particularly contentious, especially because it still reinforces this firm grip that criminal justice has over treatment, as well as over our drug policy framework overall, the influence that the criminal justice system continues to have over drug use and addiction, and the way that it continues to stigmatize and punish people who use drugs or people who have a chronic relapsing condition and need supportive services. And finally, the discussions came up around how we need to recognize and support people who are facing vulnerabilities due to criminal justice involvement, are facing barriers. Increased barriers and issues because of criminal justice involvement, and how we need more supportive services for that particular population. And also we need to recognize how undocumented individuals face a special set of collateral consequences due to criminal justice involvement, even for low-level possession and even for arrests without conviction. And so we talked about, our recommendations weren't organized by the four pillars, but really tried to develop them so that in a way to integrate the four pillars and not reinforce the silos. And so largely one of our overarching recommendations is really to get these different agencies that have these different set of exclusionary policies related to drugs and how we could get these sectors to start talking to each other and start developing uniform metrics across the board that aren't just around drug use, but metrics around health and wellness and what it would mean to have a successful drug policy. What should success look like across agencies? And then from a prevention perspective, again, we echo this theme of how we need to invest and target these communities, you know, those bright red spots on the maps, how we need to do more economic development and address the social determinants of health more broadly in these communities. The blueprint gives some specifics there. And then education, specifically education across the professionals, including medical providers who touch people who use drugs, and is actually now a really interesting area as we talk about prescription drug abuse and as medical providers start becoming, at least in New York, more vocal about how they don't know what to do when they're prescribing somebody and they're presenting with they possibly have addiction and they don't know what to do about it and they don't have the training. And so really talking about how we could broaden education around addiction and then how we could use a more integrative model, as others have discussed about, that incorporates treatment as well as meaningfully integrates harm reduction together with health services and this health service system overall. And in public safety, how we could look at alternative policing practices, some which are underway across the nation. And so this is my information. I forgot to put the website, but if you go to www.niam.org/drugpolicyblueprint, you will be able to access this and read more, or you could email me with questions. And that's it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. Well, it's quite a lot of information that everyone tried to squeeze in. And we actually maybe have time for one question or so, because it's just about 4 o'clock. So any comment that can, or question that might have a short answer, or something that is a statement on tying all the presentations together? Any comments? Okay, with that, I thank you. Thank you all for coming. Again, I invite you to the ATOD reception tonight starting at 6:30, a few doors down, and to, consider submitting an abstract next year for the work you're doing, and as it relates to the, in my case, since I'm from the ATOD section, or behavioral health. And but, of course, as we've heard today, it crosses HIV in particular as well. So thank you all for coming, and thank you to our speakers.